Susan Feinstein is from Harvard University, and she has now the word.
Thank you, Uta, and thanks to Neil and Margaret, but especially thank you to Peter for being here. And I just wanted to preface this by a few comments about Peter, whom I've known for at least 35 years. I'm not quite sure how long as a friend, but more recently as a colleague. Peter, as a colleague, can always be counted on to read one's writings and comment on them, often very insightfully. But also, of the colleagues I've had, where most of you see them on a Monday morning, you'll say something like, how was your weekend, or did you enjoy the movie, or something. Peter would ask questions like, well, do you think that the concept of the just city is the same as the concept of the good city, as he meets you in the elevator on the way to your office? Or what do you think of Marx's concept of species being, or something like that? So Peter was always very, very challenging. And we've argued throughout the years and had disagreements, but also Peter is unusual in never being defensive, in always liking to discuss, but never taking personally any disagreement. So it's with great pleasure that I can be here to celebrate his 80th birthday, which we're having, I guess, a month-long celebration of here and in New York as well. What I want to talk about is part of a larger body of work that I've been doing for some time, which really began at a conference at Oxford in honor of David Harvey, 20 years after the publication of Social Justice in the City, and it made me begin to think about the question of justice as it relates to planning. Now, I think that when we're talking about planning and planners, and after all, I, like Peter, teach mainly students who are candidates for master's degrees in urban planning, I don't think we're talking about revolutionary transformation when we're talking about what planners can do to make more just cities. And my book is to be called The Just City, but it probably should be really called The Juster City, or The More Just City, that the title is more has a better brand name, but it isn't really that accurate. At any rate, what I want to talk about is what urban planners can do to make policy more just under the circumstances in which they find themselves. They may be working for a government, or they may be working for a community-based organization. I'm not that interested in those working for real estate consultants or developers, I guess. Now, Peter, who read an earlier version, or actually this version of this paper, said, if you want a better result, change the context. Don't talk planners into better principles. And I think that's a nice argument, but that it's more ambitious than I think it's possible to be. I don't think planners themselves can change the context, or at least not in their role as planner, but that nevertheless they do have choices that can make urban policy more or less just. At the local level, it does make a difference whether money is spent on stadiums, which New York has spent lavish amounts of money on lately, or on social housing, on mega projects, or on schools, that it matters whether families are displaced for the purpose of economic development, or whether people can stay in place and have their neighborhoods improved for their benefit. And these are policies that are within the control of planners at the local level, or at least to some degree. And these are decisions which are made all the time and routinely. Now, in terms of planning theory, which is the particular area that I teach in, I think that there are certain questions that planning theory needs to address in relationship to urban policy, which are how to explain and evaluate planning outcomes, that is, to be critical, in fact, of what planning is doing. That these days planners are so much trapped in the idea of making their city competitive, and that word alone should perhaps trigger an evaluative approach, a critical approach. And then if that's not what you want to do, if competition isn't first on your list of priorities, what principles, in fact, should guide the formulation and implementation of planning? In another piece of work that I did, and which I'm not going to go into here, I set forth the three criteria of equity, diversity, and democracy. But what I want to do today is to interrogate these criteria in relation to particular issues that are important for planning. I'm going to just really skip over this slide, which talks about the different emphases that that have been the case in the history of city planning, and how most recently among those people who would consider themselves critical theorists, communication and negotiation, a Habermasian approach, has been very dominant, and that the problem, as Oren Yeftichel has argued, for example, is that that approach doesn't look at outcomes. It's, as many early as the rational model did as well, simply looks at process. And so if you're concerned with the right to the city, what you have to be concerned with is not simply the process, but what comes out of the process. Now, citizen participation has become one for students who consider themselves progressive. There's always a very big desire to encourage citizen participation. But this is one of the concepts that I think is, in fact, problematic. In the 1960s and 70s, urban social movements made participation, community control, one of their principal demands, and it had a very, at that time, radical tinge to it. It was a response to a lack of responsiveness on the part of what Michael Lipsky called street-level bureaucrats. It was a response to what Robert Blauner labeled internal colonialism, that is, in particular in American cities, white bureaucrats within black communities. It was assumed that community power would produce redistribution. But in the 1980s, we saw on the part of low-income people a diminution of the demand for community control. And on the other hand, on the part of city governments, the use of various participatory mechanisms as a method of co-optation. I studied a program in Minneapolis called the Neighborhood Revitalization Program, which allowed each neighborhood not only to advise on planning, but actually to get a fair chunk of money. It was redistributive in the sense that the poorer communities got much more budgeting power than wealthier communities. The outcomes of it were, it was quite successful in terms of making these communities better places in which to live, in producing amenities. But it turned out that it was not really a redistributive program, and one of the main reasons why it was not really a redistributive program was that middle-class people tended so much to dominate the planning process, that homeowners in particular were much more active than renters, even when in many cases there was goodwill and a desire to be inclusive of renters. So about citizen participation, what I could say is that it is useful in terms of providing local knowledge. It certainly is more democratic than not having it. But on the other hand, it doesn't really, citizen participation is not necessarily a path toward greater equity, and often it can be just the opposite. It can lead, in the worst cases, to parochialism and corruption, but even in the better cases, it tends to become routinized, institutionalized, dominated by the same people over many years, and not the path by which one is going to see a change in the distribution of benefits to any great extent. Diversity has become, along with post-structuralism, the Jane Jacobs concept of what cities should be like, what the good city is like, concern in both Western, well, in most places, in terms of the integration of immigrants and non-white people into majority societies. And planners have adopted diversity with a vengeance when you're talking about mixed uses and types of buildings. But the question of social mix is, again, a problematic one, as citizen participation is also problematic. In philosophy, planners or philosophers use the term recognition. And can we have recognition of the other without, in fact, the submerging of the other? Can planners, in fact, even plan for diversity at all? There's been much criticism of, quote, planned diversity, which might be an oxymoron just as a term, but of producing simulacra of diversity rather than the real thing. Moreover, there is no necessary relationship between diversity and equity. In the discussions yesterday of gentrification and displacement of people in order to provide for mixed communities or diverse communities as the rationalization, this is a crucial issue right now for planning. In all the European countries where social housing is being broken up, in Chicago, where Hope 6 is destroying almost all the public housing that existed. And if you listen to, for example, Mayor Daley of Chicago, he's doing it only for the welfare of the people who were living there, who are now being displaced in the interests of diversity. So diversity is well and good if that's what you start out with. But what about if that isn't what you start out with, if you, in fact, do have concentrations of people by ethnicity or by income? Is this something that you're supposed to do something about by breaking them up? Displacement of people, spatial movement of people, apartheid in its extreme case, this has been used in many times, in many places, as a method not, in fact, of producing integration or tolerance or recognition, but as a matter of fact of breaking up communities and of breaking up people who, if they were together, might have some power. So that the whole question of diversity is a crucial issue for planners, but how it should be handled is one that that you can only decide in the particular context. In the area of housing and urban regeneration, when we talk about the right to the city, we're talking about the right to housing. But there's now a real, and I was talking with Eustace Uitermark this morning at breakfast about this, there's a real problem in terms of the breakdown of, in Europe in particular, mass publics that favored social housing. Michael Harlow's book, The People's Home, which is not a recent book, but really that was the concern that he had at the end, was the lack now of a political will for social housing. And without that political will, there's a tension between equity as produced by housing and democracy. Well, what we've seen in the whole post-war history of urban regeneration has been a group of conflicts, repetitive conflicts. The theme is always the same, if the particular issues are different, of growth versus equity. And so my conclusion in terms of the right to the city is that these values, which are those that underlie a concept of the just city, and I might note that Peter, and this is a quote from a paper that Peter did at Nanterre, he said the just city sees justice as a distributional issue and aims at some form of equality. But a good city should not be simply a city with distributional equity, but one that supports the full development of each individual and of all individuals. And that's a real, then that raises a real question, because can you achieve equity and democracy at the same time in a society which is unequal to begin with? In conclusion then, in relation to the broad issue areas of urban planning, the values of equity, diversity, and democracy can pull in different ways. There's a too easy assumption, I think, among progressive planners that all of these somehow work together, but that in each of these policy arenas, in which I really just skimmed today, just touched on, that it's hard to say in advance which of these values should prevail, that context and historical moment make the choice of the most just policy somewhat indeterminate. But I would argue that perhaps the concept of justice should, the just should precede the good, and that it is possible to specify more abstractly criteria by which to evaluate policy. And what I'm aiming to do in my book is to provide, in the way that Martha Nussbaum provides, a list of capabilities for what she would call the good society, that I could provide a list of criteria by which we can evaluate planning policies. And although the particular policy can't be evaluated independent of its context, I think that the more general criteria can be stated more universally. Thank you.